This podcast was recorded Thursday, December 12th at 10:15 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like Ohio lawmakers will vote themselves a pay raise. You know, they probably deserve a modest cost of living increase. But it's odd the proposal did not come up before Election Day. You gotta love lame duck. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who do some of the real work of lawmaking when there is little to lose. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, part of the fallout from The Game earns our Snollygoster of the Week award. But first, it is the most wonderful time of the year, or the most wonderful time of every 2 years, the lame duck session of the Ohio General Assembly. This period between Election Day and the end of the legislative session is always busy. Maybe lawmakers are just like the rest of us and they procrastinate. Or, A, they want to pass legislation when they no longer have to answer to voters because they are leaving office by choice or by the voters' will. Or B, they don't have to face the voters for 2 years. And we all know how short voters' memories are. Do you remember the laws that passed in December of 2022? I can't, and I do this for a living. To give us an inside look of what this process is like, we turn to Snollygoster favorite, our resident recovering lawmaker, former State Representative Gene Krebs. Gene, welcome.
Thank you, Mike, for having me on. These are always fun.
Great. Now, you served from 1993 to 2000, which by my math means you participated in four lame duck sessions as a lawmaker, 1994, 96, 98, and 2000. Do you have fond memories of those sessions?
During my time period, we spent a lot of that time saying goodbye to people as they were leaving, because there's a lot of change going on. But the lame duck session that sticks in my head that had the most amount of impact during the 1990s was the one that occurred directly before my being sworn in.
This was 1992.
And that was the lame. Yeah. 1992, December 17th, to be exact. Now, remember, I'm not there, but I can tell you what date it was. That was the date that the General Assembly approved the Voinovich sales tax increase. The state of Ohio at that time was having to undergo some budgetary trauma, and the old school Republicans, the go-along, get-along gang, believed that if times got tough, well, you raised taxes and you did not reform. Those of us in the conservative caveman caucus wanted to see reforms. What was so interesting about it was that, so the first question you have to ask yourself during any lame duck session is, what does the governor want?
Interesting.
And Voinovich really wanted that sales tax increase to go through. So he went to, or his staff went to, probably more accurately, certain Republicans, including caveman caucus members who had been fire-breathing, brimstone-spewing arch-conservatives on all tax increases, and they voted for the Voinovich sales tax increase. Then lo and behold, come January 3rd, they were appointed to certain boards and commissions.
Wow.
Now,
so these are outgoing lawmakers. These are outgoing lawmakers. Were they term limited?
Yes.
Yeah, they were just, or they had lost, maybe?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Or they chose not to run, or whatever the issue was. And one special case was a lawmaker who had run. He'd gotten thrown into a Democrat seat. I will not use his name because he's passed and He can't defend himself now. But he got thrown into a seat with a sitting Democrat member who beat him. We later beat her. And, he'd always been a real firebrand for the cause. Well, he got offered a deal by Governor Voinovich, apparently. And, the East Boards and Commissions, This is something now you're the goal of my appearing on all these things that I ever appear on with you is to part the curtain so that Bobby and Betty Buckeye can get a sense of what really goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So many members who are serving are there with to finish out their PERS. They need to finish out their public employee retirement system. Many of them want to get to a certain number of years. They want to get to a certain high standard. By the way, in case you're wondering, I only have 12 years in. My income from PERS is quite modest as a result of that. Okay.
So this was a way to get that retirement income up by cutting a deal with the governor and then getting on this board of commission, which technically you're a state employee when you're on that board of commission.
And what's even better about these things is that many of these boards and commissions would meet once a month, once or twice every 2 months.
Kind of like the legislature.
Well, actually, there's always a dozen or so of us who would really put the time in. I always read every single bill before it came to the floor.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to that. We'll get to that. But anyway, so 1992, yeah. Of course, George H.W. Bush lost because he said, "Read my lips, no new taxes," and then raised taxes. And you're saying weeks after, days after that election, George Voinovich wheeled and dealed and got a tax hike passed.
Very good insight. Yes, never thought about the Bush 41 connection, but you're exactly right.
So that was my question about what types of bills passed during lame ducks. Now, my question was, do controversial bills pass during lame duck? Well, there's an example of one that did pass during lame duck.
You can see controversial bills come up, although for the life of me, I can't really think of one. Mostly these were bills that the Senate and the House were having a disagreement on. There were several first rules I was taught when I fetched up in 93. One of them is that in the Ohio House of Representatives, the enemy is not our Democrat colleagues in the House. The enemy is the state Senate.
Sounds like today, Gene.
And the state Senate had the same thing. The Republicans said, our enemy isn't the Democrats. That's not our enemy. It's the Ohio House Republicans.
So this lame duck session, it can be used to sort of reconcile bills that the House and Senate have disagreed on. That's one way. It's sort of leftover
exactly.
work.
Exactly.
Back to the controversial bills. Would there ever be a way, not that it's not going to happen now, but say a very controversial bill might be to reverse the voters' will to legalize recreational marijuana. Is there any way that type of bill, that type of, outrageously controversial bill would
yes.
be ever be addressed in a lame duck
yes.
session?
There definitely is that possibility. Depends upon the personal dynamics and who's willing to do some log rolling and some horse trading for whatever may happen. Now, you do bring up one other thing, too, is that if I've been using this as a litmus test, if the House and Senate Republicans were absolutely two well-oiled machines right now, they would be putting forward some variation of the Iowa redistricting plan on the ballot for May of 2025.
Wow. Even though
they're not.
Yeah. But of course, the incentive isn't there. They trounced the latest redistricting plan. There might be one coming up soon. But these are long days and long sessions. And you say you read every bill. How many lawmakers do read everything that comes across their desk, the amendments, the bills, the changes, and can they read everything that comes across their desk during this time?
Yeah. First of all, there's when I was there, about a dozen of us did this, both sides of the aisle. The only times we had to, and I was fortunate enough to sit next to my good friend Ron Amstutz on the floor of the Ohio House. And I sat next to Ron specifically because he also read every bill. And one time, Speaker Davidson moved to abolish the rules, and we brought a bill directly out of committee onto the floor, and they promptly plopped that puppy down on our desk. Now, that was back in the days of paper bills.
Paper, yes.
And I turned to Ron. This thing was about 10 inches thick. So I turned to Ron and I said, "You start at this page and I'll start at the, you know," and we just started reading as the sponsors were going. If you're not a speed reader when you are elected, you will be by the time you leave.
Yeah.
And it was a bill dealing with traffic cameras and stoplights and things like that. And I found a flaw in the bill, an absolute flaw in the bill that was directly contrary to what the sponsor was talking about. So, you know, I pointed out to Ron. Ron looks at me, he reads it, and he goes, "Oh my gosh, you gotta say something." I said, "Yeah." So when the sponsor got done, I stood up. Joanne Davidson saw me and gave me that gimlet eye of, "Oh, darn it, something's not right. What is going on?" You know, if
Yeah.
eyes could throw knives, I'd been carried off the four chambers in a basket. So I stood up and I asked a question, and the sponsor, you could hear all of a sudden, you heard 99 people get their books, get their copies of the bill up on the desk. You can hear them flipping through the pages as I quote the line on it. And he looks at Joanne, he looks back at his desk, he looks at Joanne and says, "Move to re-refer to rules and reference for further consideration."
Well, that's the problem. And
Everybody vote yes?
so this was a mistake that wasn't mischievous. It was just a mistake. But
It was just a mistake.
has there ever been mischief when they plop a 10-inch, now a digital 10-inch bill in front of you and expect you to vote on it quickly?
I can't think of anything like that occurring during my time. I would like to say they don't do it now because of the thing that I was also told when you first arrive is that the only time you can lie is literally on your way out the door because no one will trust you. However, I've sat in committee meetings where I've actually seen members lie and lobbyists lie. So I'm not sure how things work anymore, Mike.
Yeah, well, it is, it's a very strange time, as we all know. How about the tacking of amendments onto bills? That's a favorite sport of the lame duck session. How does that work?
It works sometimes because the amendments need to actually go into the other bill. There's some legitimacy to this. I always use the analogy that a bill by itself needs to have a certain weight. It needs to have a certain amount of gravitas, a certain amount of impact in order to achieve enough. I'm gonna mix all my metaphors here. Escape velocity to escape from one chamber over to the other. But if you have several of these similar topics into one bill, for example, naming bridges after dead people and highways after dead people, okay? If you have enough of those, you can start to consolidate those into a bill. And that's the idealized thing to do for this.
So there are Christmas tree bills, yes, no, and are they're but they're useful Christmas trees, and they sometimes do have a good purpose.
Oh, they can be very harmful too. They can have a good purpose, but what they can also do is be a very effective way to trap all of your enemies into voting with your friends on a certain particular bill. You can load it up not just with Christmas ornaments, but with a whole lot of poison pills.
What's the attitude of a lawmaker leaving on his or her own? Are they trying to like make a final mark, something that they've tried to get passed in their, 2, 4, 6, 8 years?
Many of them leave angry. They leave unfulfilled. The joke is it takes 7.5 years to figure out how things work. And with term limits, you're just beginning to understand how things work, and you leave. And it's through to no actions of your own. It's just it seems very arbitrary. They're just feeling, hey, what happened? I was fortunate enough, I went into elective office right away, but then I got involved in think tank work, which was a great fit for me for many years because I ran my legislative office like a think tank, like you can imagine I would.
How about the attitude of a lawmaker leaving because he or she lost? You said the lawmakers who are leaving on their own are angry. What about those lawmakers who got beat?
My personal opinion, my in on this is not a huge number, but those who lost in primaries, even though they've had a longer time to deal with the pain, often feel the pain even more closely.
Yeah. Because the end is near.
They feel like they were they're betrayed by their own people.
Yeah. Should lame duck sessions be banned, Gene? We could wait. We could wait until January and pass legislation, and I believe the earth would continue to spin. Should we do away with these? Because there is, you know, there could be mistakes. There could be mischief. There could be, you know, deals cut. It doesn't seem like the best way to govern a state.
Well, it could be. You could make that argument in many states, but in Ohio, you run back smack dab into term limits. And in every 2 years, roughly a quarter of the members of the House won't know where the restrooms are. This is their very first visit to the set, you know. And the first month of January increasingly strikes me as barely contained chaos. Members are trying to figure out what, you know, they're asking for committees. They're complaining about the committees they got put on. They're trying to change committees. The committees are getting organized. They're trying to figure out, you know, all that stuff. My personal opinion is it's very hard to get a lot done in that first month. And so you got to remember also, traditionally, members are also gone in the summer. They're supposed to be working at the local county fairs. And then they're back a little bit in September, but then they get back right away onto campaign. So they may not have been doing any substantive hearings for, 6 months, 7 months now? So you need to get a little bit of work under your fingernails.
But that work can't be done in, say, June or August or May. You have to have it in these 2.5 weeks in late December after the voters have had their say.
So here's an analogy for your listeners to think about. Serving in the Ohio House of Representatives, for example, is very similar to college in that you have four terms, okay?
Yep.
Freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. Okay. You make great friends. You learn a whole lot of stuff. But in college, too many people also procrastinate and don't do their essay until the week before it's due. Okay.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the General Assembly. It's too often. Now, in my case, I'm slightly obsessive compulsive. So I get everything done within 3 weeks after assignment.
Yeah. So deadline of the end of a session, because they have to start over. If they don't get stuff done before December 31st, it's all wiped clean and they've got to start over. So yeah, that deadline is looming, and that's what Ohio lawmakers are scrambling to meet right now in the midst of this lame duck session. Gene Krebs, what's your new title now? What's your club, Recovering Politicians Club?
Yes, the Ohio Association Recovering Legislators. We meet on alternate Tuesday nights in the basement of Methodist churches.
Ah, there you go. War stories aplenty, I'm sure. Gene Krebs,
absolutely,
former state legislator from far western Ohio. We appreciate your time on Snollygoster.
Thank you, Mike.
We'll be right back.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. This week, we give it to the state lawmaker so upset that Michigan players tried to plant a Michigan flag at the 50-yard line of Ohio Stadium after OSU's loss. That lawmaker has filed a bill to make that action a crime. And not just a crime, a felony. It is called the Ohio Sportsmanship Act. It would prohibit planting a flagpole and flag at the center of Ohio Stadium's football field on the day of a college football game. Of course, you know, that leads to many questions. Would it be a crime to plant a flag in the end zone? How about the 30-yard line? Is it just the center? Anyway, it doesn't matter. This will not become law. And as Michigan players found out, planting a flag in artificial turf is impossible. Because this is so silly and designed to get publicity, designed to pander to OSU fans still smarting from the loss and the game, we're not going to name the lawmaker. Go Google it if you want. But we have to admit, it's a pretty shrewd move. That will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.